Hey, you guys, it's movie retrospective time once again. Now, this movie right here, this is another one that has been on my list since whenever the hell we even started doing movie retrospectives, and I made like my first like master list of all the movies that I wanted to do, like only 10% of which I've got to. But this one has been on there since the very beginning because I fucking love this movie. And I feel like, I mean, I guess if you're people that are really, really into Italian horror and like the school of Dario Argento and stuff, they might have seen it, but I feel like this really isn't one that gets a lot of mainstream attention, and it really should because it's a really cool, weird zombie movie.
It's a good looking movie. It's very Italian.
It is.
Very Italian, but not a, it's weird. It's a weird movie.
It's a weird movie.
It's a weird movie, yeah.
But in a good way.
Yeah. It got a hot girl in it and everything. Weird shit happens over her. This chick, she's just fucking, when you see her,
she's like supernatural hot.
Yeah, yeah. She's like a supermodel, and she's stacked, though, you know. And there's a weird story. She keeps coming back. You're seeing her over and over again, and she's a different person each time. And she fucks this dude over. He works in a cemetery. And she fucks him over mentally and like physically or sexually every time she sees him. You don't know what's real. It's fucking crazy. It's fucking crazy. And that's a good thing. That's the weird thing about these old Italian. This is a retro style Italian horror.
It's from 1994.
It's from 94, but the way it's edited and the way the story is told, it kind of feels like it's from 74. Visually, it looks stunning, though. I liked it.
It's a beautiful, like, very gothic looking movie.
I enjoyed the movie. I didn't really understand it. I'd have to see it a couple times.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that, and okay, so the interesting thing about this one, and you really don't see a lot of movies like this, it has elements of, you know, splatter zombie movies like, you know, Brain Dead, you know,
Evil
aka
Dead.
Dead Alive, Evil Dead. It has some stuff like that. But then it has like some Terry Gilliam-esque kind of stuff, like referring to Brazil.
Yeah.
And then it has like some kind of arty philosophical existential kind of stuff.
Like, you know what it reminded
like
me of?
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead or something like that, where it has that too, but it's not so arty a movie that it's like an art film and everyone will roll their eyes. It's still like a fun, weird, gory movie.
It kind of reminded me of a little bit more of a Roman Polanski film, kind of like The Tenant. It was kind of like that, you know.
Funny.
Funny,
because it's
like
a comedy,
Evil Dead.
Essentially,
the tone is more like Evil Dead, but it was doing shit like The Tenant did, where reality was getting warped. You weren't sure what was real.
And there
what
was a
wasn't.
Lot. Of, yeah, and there was
and
a
why
lot.
Why is this shit happening?
Mirroring or people like in different identities, like a David Lynch movie, like Lost Highway or Mulholland Drive.
Yeah,
or something
that too.
Like that.
I guess
it had a little bit of that going on. But like I said, it's not like so arty farty that that people like roll their eyes at it. It's still like a fun zombie movie.
Yeah, like in the way Evil Dead is fun.
In the way that Evil Dead is fun, and it has like some fun gore, and it's essentially, I would call it a surrealist existential horror comedy, because I think it is a comedy first and foremost.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it is.
Although it has a lot of horror elements to it, but you can just watch it straightforward like that, you know, just for the zombies, just for the weirdness, and just boobs,
and it has a lot of action in it too, which that wasn't in a Polanski film.
Yeah,
but it's weird, you know what I mean? It's just, you got to take the movie on you know, you can't make this movie something that it isn't. You just have to kind of take it as it comes. It's visually stunning.
It's a beautiful, beautiful looking movie.
It's got, it's basically a love story between this guy and this super hot fucking chick. And she's weird as shit and she's different every time you see her. And I guess she dies and keeps coming back. It's hard to tell because you just have to see it for yourself. It's not the same woman. It's the same actress. It's the same character. But she keeps coming back.
In different forms.
In
like
different
configurations.
Yeah, like she leaves, but then she comes back. And I think even some versions of her die, right? And she still comes back. Yeah. It's
fucking so
weird.
Let
it's
me
about
go.
A cemetery where you bury the people and they come back to life. And nobody believes him. He works in the cemetery. And that's just not the only thing. There's a bunch of other weird shit. You can't tell what's real.
Like I said, it's surrealist, but not in a way that's necessarily going to like piss people off or they're going to be super confused, because it's still fun to watch.
When that ending came, man, I was like, what?
A lot of people say that.
I was super confused.
Well, like I said, there are a lot of different interpretations. It leaves it open to interpretation, but I've heard a lot of like really good interpretations, and I don't know if anyone is the right one or the wrong one. Okay, so let's go into a little context about this. Now, by the time that this was made in 1993, it actually came out in 1994, Italian horror cinema. I mean, Dario Argento was still making movies, stuff like that, but the heyday of the Italian horror film had kind of passed. Now, this movie was famously directed by Michele Soavi. Now, he started out as an actor. He was in some early, Italian horror. And then he, for a time, worked with Dario Argento for, I believe, at least 10 years on second unit stuff. He was an assistant director, stuff like that. He worked on Tenebrae. He worked in opera. He worked on Phenomena. So him and Dario were kind of like simpatico. And then he's also later worked with Terry Gilliam. He worked on The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. He also worked on Lamberto Bava's Demons movies. So this guy is like very, very high up in the Italian film hierarchy. Unfortunately, he only made a few movies. He made The Stage Fright, which I think came out in 1987, you know, very well-known slasher. He also made The Church, which is kind of a mess, but I really liked it. The Sect, which I saw a long time ago, but don't remember that much about. And then he made this one, Della Morte, Della More, better known in the US and the UK as Cemetery Man, even though I do think that the original title was better. Now, where this came from, okay, so in 1986, this guy named Tiziano Sclavi, he started doing this comic book series called Dylan Dog. Now, Dylan Dog is about, like, a paranormal investigator. Now, I don't know if this series is still ongoing, because it was very, very long-lived. It's kind of a cult comic in the U.S., but in Italy, it was massively popular. I mean, you could buy it at any... From what I've heard, you could buy it at any newsstand, just like you can buy fucking Archie comics and shit like that over here. They were everywhere. Like, everybody was really into this. Interestingly, the character of Dylan, the paranormal investigator in this comic book... He drew it based on the English actor, Rupert Everett, who, if you've seen Cemetery Man, is the main character in this movie. So that did not happen, like, on purpose, necessarily. He just thought Rupert Everett looked cool, like, from some of the other movies that he was in, and used him, like, as a model for the Dylan Dog character. And it just so happened that later on, they're like, hey, when we're making Della Morte, Della More, which was based on the novel of the same name, which... Tiziano Sclavi wrote before he did the comic book, but he didn't publish it until after the comic book got popular. You know what I mean? So, but they were able to get Rupert Everett to do this, even though Rupert Everett kind of more known for doing rom-coms or period dramas or stuff like that. He's more of like a theatrical, like Shakespearean style actor. So he didn't really like horror movies, and I don't think he's done one since, which is kind of a shame because he is... really, really fucking good in this. I think the cool thing about him, he's a little bit like, you know, Ash in Evil Dead, but it's not as zany. He's very sardonic. He's very dry. So he works at this cemetery in Italy called Buffalora in this little town, and he's very world-weary. So in this cemetery, like some people, not everybody, but sometimes when he buries people, 7 days after they die, they come back out of the graves as zombies. And he has gotten to the point, like at the beginning of this movie, he's gotten to the point where he's just so over it that it's like, you know, the zombies show up at his little cottage in the middle of the cemetery and he's just like talking on the phone. He's just like, yeah, hang on a minute. Blam! And then like he just goes back to the phone call because it's just like a very workaday thing to happen.
Yeah, they're zombies, but they can talk. From what I can remember, weren't they talking?
Yeah, and some of them still maintained, bits of their personality too. Yeah. So you have his
character, like a ghost, a living ghost.
His character, who is kind of like, there's this whole one of the themes of the movie. I think is kind of like just the repetition of life, or how life just becomes, you know, life and death almost become like intertwined, or they become almost the same thing. And that's kind of one of the things that he says, where he's just so like over it and he doesn't care and he doesn't really like relating to living people. He's like much happier being alone or being around dead people because he doesn't really have to like, you know, interact. So he's almost kind of like at a point where he just doesn't give a shit about the world. And he has a sidekick named Nagi. And this guy is played by a French actor, Francois Hadji Lazaro, is I think how you pronounce his name. He's like a French rock star, actually. And he's an opera singer, too, I believe.
Yeah, this is a great character.
And yeah, he's really one of the best. And he was also in, City of Lost Children, which is also a great movie. He was in a couple other like real weird movies like that.
He kind of looks like Curly from the damn Three Stooges. Yeah. Bald, little, short, fat guy. And his character is kind of, he's like a mentally retarded guy.
Yeah.
But that's his best friend and shit. It's a trip, man. It's
just and he's like, trip, yeah, man. And he's like, he can only say like one word. He can only say nya. That's why they call him Nagi.
Yeah.
And, but he's kind of like, he's almost like a puppy dog. You know what I mean? Like, he's kind of like mentally challenged, but he's like really sympathetic and like kind of sweet and cute and everything. And,
he thinks he's a little boy.
Yeah. So initially, Francesco Della Morte, who's Rupert Everett's character, kind of treats him like crap. You know what I mean? But, you know, later on, they kind of like the whole friendship thing comes about. But so they're dealing with this outbreak of zombies in Buffalo Cemetery.
Yeah. Nobody believes them.
And nobody believes it. And, yeah. And, in a way, too, this is kind of where the Terry Gilliam thing comes in, where it's almost kind of like, because the only other living friend that Francesco has is this other guy named Franco, who works in this, like a very Brazil style, not Brazil the country, but Brazil the movie.
Yeah.
You know, very, like, with all the stacked paperwork and all this, like, ridiculous, like, pointless, you know, bureaucracy and stuff.
Yeah.
So you have to fill out this exact form for him to complain, you know, to get extra money for dealing with the zombies and all this other stuff. And, you know, he doesn't want to do it. He's like, you know what? It's easier to just shoot him. And it's like, no one believes him anyway. And then
he tells them, yeah, they just come back to life. And then people just blow it off like, yeah, they think he's joking.
Whatever.
They think he's joking, you know what I mean?
But well, no, I think that's kind of another underlying theme of the thing, too. Not only just this whole workaday, we're not getting anywhere, like Sisyphean kind of like pushing the rock up and it falling back down.
Yeah.
But it's just also kind of like, there's this layer of bureaucracy where no one really gives a crap. It's like there's the mayor, and it's like all he cares about is getting votes.
If you've ever seen
votes.
The movie Brazil, you'll know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah,
some of that shit looks like it was lifted right from. Looks like some of this stuff is lifted right from the movie.
And like
Brazil.
I said, the director of this, Michele Soavi, worked with Terry Gilliam later. Was actually like a big fan of his. So you know, so they collaborated
on a
couple
Brazil
of things.
On Blu-ray.
Yeah, so you can see where that like influence came from, and so you know, into this, you know. Cauldron of weirdness comes this beautiful, mysterious woman.
Now, this chick right here, right, is this should be illegal to look
Anna Falchi.
It should be illegal to be this pretty.
That's what I mean. It's like.
Looks like the next step in human evolution. She does. She's gorgeous.
Yeah, she's like otherworldly beautiful.
And she looks like a supermodel, but unlike an American supermodel who are typically flat. This chick is stacked.
Yeah.
And she just fucking outstanding.
Oh, God.
Like, yeah, just like her genetics are just off the fucking chart.
And she's naked in this quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're into that, this is just another plus.
Only thing that's kind of, only woman that I've seen on the movies kind of close to this would be kind of like the girl that played the vampire girl from Life Force.
Like Matilda May, yeah.
About like that.
That's a good thing. Because here's the thing. So this woman turns up at a funeral for this old guy who Francesco initially thinks is her dad, but actually turns out to have been her husband. He's like way, way, way older than her. And so Francesco is immediately in love with this woman. And she's kind of like not really feeling it, you know, and she's kind of regaling him with tales of like what a wonderful lover this old guy was and giving TMI.
He's like
stuff.
70.
I know.
He's this like fucking lech looking face and shit on her.
One of the best gags in this is like, because there's a little picture of him on the gravestone.
Yeah.
And it's like every time somebody says something over here, like that he doesn't approve of, he'll either be smiling or frowning, like on the little picture. So it's different. So finally, so Francesco's like trying to get in her pants and everything because he's fallen in love with her like immediately at first sight, which, you know, I can understand. Like,
it'd be hard to resist.
It would be. So, so she's just kind of like, yeah, whatever, I can't really, it's my dead husband, blah, blah, blah. But then with the second he says, this cemetery has a beautiful ossuary, she's like, hmm? And she is into that shit.
So
there's like a whole thing where like, you know, she goes in there and she's getting all up in the bones and it's all like gross and everything. And she's
got a death fetish.
Yeah. And they're all like fucking on her husband's grave because he, you know, because I never kept secrets from him.
Yeah,
like he would have wanted to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she kind of insinuated that it was an open relationship. That he didn't keep secrets, that she didn't keep secrets from him, and that kind of shit went down. That's how I interpreted it.
Sort of, I guess it could be interpreted either way. You know what I mean? It didn't necessarily have to be. But
that's
I'm,
how I kind of interpreted
it. So there's that whole thing. Now, while
he was doing a lecherous face on the photograph while
like,
all that was going, he's like, yeah. That's how I fucking took it.
So, yeah. So as much as, like, he's into that, and then, like, She seems to fall for him too after, like, he impresses her with how awesome the ossuary is and, you know, all this death fetish stuff and all that. But then tragedy occurs when there's a thing where, because when they're fucking on the dead husband's grave.
Yeah, this is spoilers now.
Yeah, spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. Like, and oh, okay, so if you want to watch this movie before we talk about it, it's free on YouTube. Like, somebody has uploaded it.
And it's good quality. It's like HD.
Which is good because this is a bitch to get hold of. I don't even think it's out on Blu-ray. There was a DVD, I think Anchor Bay put out a DVD of it in 2006, which I think I have somewhere, but I think it might be in the attic.
So watch it free on YouTube if you want to fucking cut it off.
No, like, before somebody, like, takes it down, because I'm sure it's, like, a copyright violation. Even though, the thing about it is that, you know, this was released on a grand total of 6 movie theaters in the U.S., you know, so obviously it didn't do very well. Because, like I said, black comedy is a very hard sell. And this is a weird movie.
This isn't something that Hollywood would have gotten behind either.
This is not, I mean, this is not so weird that it's off-putting, but weird. It's a weird movie.
It doesn't fit the American market.
It doesn't fit into one genre.
And it's not, and Hollywood is not going to bump one of their movies out of the theater, put this in it. You know.
This is just too odd. This is too much of an oddball type of movie. So, yeah, so various things intervene. So they're fucking on the old dude's grave, and he zombifies, because I guess the 7 days have
passed.
Underneath
the ground,
underneath the ground, and, like, comes out. Like, and bites her.
Yeah.
And then there's a thing where, you know, Francesco thinks she's dead from the bite or from a heart attack or whatever, and so he knows that he's going to have to shoot her when she comes back as a returner. They don't call them zombies in this movie. He calls them returners. And then it comes to pass that she actually wasn't dead, so he killed her when she was still alive, and she came back later as a zombie. And then as the movie goes on, he starts, like, 2 more times, he meets another woman who is a different woman, but
it's that same actress.
Played by that same actress.
Right.
And she seems to respond to him the same way as the first woman
did. As if she knew him.
Even though she's a different woman.
Yeah, which that kind of fucking throws you. Is he imagining that all these women are the same and they all look the same? Is it the same one coming back in, you know, in different bodies? It's just an unknown. I think she's a figment of his imagination.
I think she's a representation.
Representation of fucking true love. So I think it's different women.
That's like his idealized.
But he's seeing it that as
he's
the same.
Seeing it
That's
as
how
her.
I thought it was.
That's what I thought it was too. Yeah. That is, I mean, you could interpret it in different ways because, like I said, the ending of this is going to make you think, oh, maybe the whole thing didn't happen, or, you know, there are various other things going on. But I do think that she's just a representation, or you're just seeing her through his eyes.
And that kind of keys back to what you were telling me. I didn't realize that he was friends with the dude who made the movie Brazil.
Yeah.
Because now you throw that in the mix, because there's a lot of that kind of shit that goes on in Brazil. It's a representation of an idealized fucking mate is what it is.
Yeah.
And which that's kind of like something you'd see in Brazil.
Yeah.
The movie Brazil.
Right.
Trying to keep it straight. And the movie Brazil has nothing to do with Brazil.
Yeah.
Other than the damn horrible bureaucracy, which that Brazil is a horrible bureaucracy. But
yeah, so this does have a little bit of that. This, you know what I mean? So this is kind of like I said, it's like Evil Dead meets Terry Gilliam meets super gothic Italian. It's not as much like a Dario Argento movie as you might think, even though Michele Soavi worked with Dario Argento for a very long time.
It has, like, that Italian tone, though.
It has an Italian tone, but a lot of Italian movies have that. Yeah. It isn't as Dario-esque as you might think. It actually makes a lot more, even though it doesn't sound like it when we're talking about it, it actually makes a lot more narrative sense than some Dario Argento movies do.
Yeah. Well, Italian theater, especially when you're talking about Dario Argento and some of these, like, you know, horror stuff, it's more about impressionism. It's not about fucking narrative and fucking
They're more worried about the effect.
It's
and
about
the mood.
How it looks and how it made you feel.
And dreamlike. This one is kind of dreamlike, too, but I don't know, in a different way than I guess Dario's are. Dario's are more like fairy tale-esque. I guess this one has a little bit of that, too, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Italian movies are also a lot of times just made in edit. They fucking shoot all kinds of shit, and they just start editing things together. Does that look pretty? Did that flow?
Right.
Yeah, let's just go with that. And really, it might have not had anything to do with really the way the story was originally supposed to go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So a lot of
they just
missing.
Decide.
They just decide.
I feel like they work a lot more from Not so much like thinking about it ahead of time, but they think like, you know, instinctively.
Yeah, they're just kind of going. They're shooting.
Which sometimes works and sometimes not.
Yeah, it for the American audience in general, it doesn't work. In general, the American audience picks stories apart. And, you know what I mean, is looking for plot holes and fucking narrative and thematic fucking shit and fucking, what do you call it, character development. Usually that's not there.
Although, like I said, I can appreciate, I love Italian movies, particularly giallo movies. I love Dario Argento movies, Italian horror, stuff like that. But you have to go into it knowing that it's a cultural difference
difference. The best Italian movies, I think, ever was the fucking Man with No Name trilogy.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, fucking Fistful of Dollars, fucking Few Dollars More. And what was the other one?
I
Clint Eastwood ones.
Yeah.
Those are really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they
were more like an American narrative, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the Dario Argento stuff, no, it isn't.
Well, like I said, it's very dreamlike. But that was kind of his thing.
Right.
This one, like I said, has a little bit of that, although it seems more grounded, even though it's more surrealist, if that makes any sense. If you've seen the movie, you probably know what I'm talking about. So while this whole thing is going on with Francesco Della Morte, with, you know, these mystery women turning up, you also have the delightful side story of Nagi. Now, Nagi, who, like I said, he's mentally challenged, but he's very sweet, this little pudgy dude and everything like that, and he's kind of like the sidekick. He has developed a crush on the mayor's daughter, Valentina, who is just a teenager. Now, shortly after meeting her...
She's also dumb as rocks.
She is, yeah.
Dumb as rocks. Yeah. Pretty, just dumb as rocks.
Shortly after meeting her, he gets nervous and throws up all over her.
Yeah.
Nice.
Immediately forgets about and goes for a motorcycle ride.
Well, she's just kind of like, no big, you know what I mean? So she goes for a motorcycle ride with this guy that she likes named Claudio. You know, he's all this with the leather jacket. Very psychomania.
Yeah, Mr. Pretty Boy.
And gets on there. And she is pretty much immediately killed by... They all hit a bus.
Bus
full of Boy Scouts that go off a cliff. It's like all the motorcycle boobs get run over. Yeah. It's super gory. It's very funny.
Yeah.
So after she gets killed and all the bodies get buried at the Buffalora Cemetery, so all of them start to come back. Now, Nagi is very excited because he was in love with Valentina and now she's dead and he knows that she's going to come back and maybe he'll have a shot with her now. And so he actually goes to her grave with this little violin that he made out of a little wooden coffin. And he's like playing her a song, like waiting for her to wake up. And then like when she wakes up, he cuts off her head, her reanimated head, and like takes it back to his little basement with him and puts her in a broken TV and like sings songs to her and stuff. Yeah. And she's into it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so fucking funny. And it's like, it's just this, it's just so, so, I mean, it's horrific, but it's also like super cute. So, okay, so you got that going on, too, which is adorable. But also, you have the whole shit with Francesco. Now, not only has he killed his first dream woman, Anna Falchi's character, who actually is never given a name. She's only called She. That's what they call her in the credits.
Right.
She doesn't have a name. And even when she's introduced, because I think the second time, like when the new mayor comes in, she's the mayor's secretary, and he says, "This is my secretary." He doesn't say what her name is or anything. So they never give her a name. So I think that's kind of significant. Like I said, it kind of points to the idea that she's just like a representation. She's an archetype of his like perfect woman or whatever. And he's seeing every woman as her.
And every time he meets one, it's not what he thinks it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in between that, like, he starts getting, there's this one really cool scene. One thing that he does, for whatever reason, like, he's really into reading old phone books. And whenever somebody dies and he buries them in the cemetery, he crosses their name out of the phone directory. So Nagi, like, burns one of the phone books, one of his last phone books, and he gets really upset about it because he's like, it was a classic. I wasn't done with that yet. You know what I mean? So, but the pages start to burn, and it's really cool because all the burn pages come up and they make like a big Grim Reaper. And the Grim Reaper starts talking to him and saying, basically, hey, stop killing the dead, because like shooting the zombies, the returners or whatever. And it's like, you know, if you're going to pull shit like that, because I guess death is saying you're stepping on my dick. So he's like, why don't you just go out and kill the living? Essentially. Right. So what Francesco does, because I didn't mention this, but earlier in town, there's all these kind of like, you know, bro type dudes in town that make fun of him because he's an outsider, and also he's like, there's a thing that where he's impotent or he doesn't have a dick or something like that.
But he does.
He does. But
they just think that.
But everybody just thinks that, and they don't really explain like why everybody started thinking that. It's just like I said, this is a very symbolic or archetypal type story. So it's not like a straightforward, this really happened. Because some of the stuff in this might not have happened, or it might all be from his imagination, or like I said, it might just be type of fairy tale, archetypal type of story. So he basically goes into town after Death tells him this and just mows down like a whole bunch of living people. Now, the funny thing about this is that he can commit all these crimes like in front of people and shit like that, and he doesn't get in trouble. So it's almost like he doesn't exist. You know what I mean? Because there's another...
Or reality isn't real.
Or reality isn't real. Because it's almost kind of like American Psycho in that way, where he's just going around doing all this crazy shit, and he's like running around covered in blood and axes and everything like that, and nobody reports it or...
Yeah.
I mean, even when he goes around saying, I did it, I murdered the people, they're just like, whatever, we know you didn't do that shit. So it's kind of like that type of thing, too.
Right, because in American Psycho, you end up not knowing whether or not maybe he's just imagining that he's killing these people.
Right.
Or maybe he is getting away with it just because of his fucking social class.
Yeah, see, it might be that, too.
Might be that, yeah.
So, like I said, I suspect that it's more like an American Psycho thing where maybe this is not really happening, or it's all in his mind, or it's in someone else's mind, or something like that. So like I said, so he meets this other woman who looks just like Anna Falchi again, and in this situation, she seems to respond to him as though she knows him and, like, falls in love with him right away and stuff, too. But the catch is that... She's so glad that she's heard that he's impotent because she has a dick phobia. She does not like being penetrated. And so she's like, I can only love an impotent man. So now
cockophobia.
Yeah. So even though he's not really impotent, he tells her, oh, I'm totally impotent. And then the next hilarious
scene. He tries to go to the doctor and get it cut off.
To get his dick cut off.
And the doctor says, like, I can't do it.
I'm not going to do that.
So he gives him this injection that'll make his dick fucking get so small it'll be like he doesn't even have one for a month.
Or it'll like deaden it
and
or something.
He's lucky because when he goes down there to finally fucking to hook up with her, she goes, oh, I changed my mind. You know, she's like, I don't have a dick phobia.
Well, no, they have sex first and it goes okay. And then, which is a very funny scene because there's like a sex scene and she's like, oh, because he's like, oh, I might not be able to do it because I don't think my medication is working or something like that. And she's like, oh, I don't think the medication is working, whatever. But what happens with this, and this is like completely not PC, but I guess you could get away with this in the 90s. What ends up happening is that she gets raped by the mayor. They don't show it, but she just like talks about it.
She says she did.
She says she did. And then she's like, because she was going to marry Francesco. And so she gets raped by the mayor, and she was like, I liked it.
Yeah.
And it's like, because, oh, well, he did it again nicely, like, you know, to say he was sorry. So he had sex with her again. Yeah. And she's like, you know, so I'm over my phobia, so I can't marry you now. So I'm going to marry him.
You could get away with that in an Italian movie.
You could.
Italians, you could probably do that today in an Italian movie.
You probably could.
Fucking crazy.
They are crazy.
That was just a kind of a plot device, though.
Yeah, because you know what I mean? It was just going to show, and like I said,
it was to show that she's fucking crazy, because she's crazy in every fucking...
Yeah, in every iteration.
In every iteration of her, she's fucking crazy.
Well, it's not so much crazy, it's just, like I said, I think that this is his perception of her.
Of what's happening.
And I think, though, the whole point of Francesco's character, the reason this is called Della Morte, Della More, not only is his last name Della Morte, his mother's last name was Della More, which means of love, whereas Della Morte means of death. So he's kind of like, and because he works at this cemetery, he's kind of like on the cusp, like between life and death, but he can't really choose either thing, like because he's kind of indifferent. And Michele Soavi has come out and said, this is not a horror movie, you know, based on people's fear of death. This is a horror movie based on someone who is afraid to live.
Yeah.
So he's talking about this is a person who embraces death because they fear it less than living. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he's just like kind of locked himself away from the world and he's perfectly happy living in this little cottage by himself, not really having any friends or just hanging out with dead people. So I think that the fact that he sees this woman as his idealized mate and that when he meets her again and again in every iteration, she ends up quote unquote fucking him over or something ends up going wrong is because it's like a representation of his fear. Like it's almost kind of like she's not going to live up to what I think she should be. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of where that's going with that. Because what happens with when he meets her again a third time, he's like bummed out at a pub or something like that. And he meets these three girls that need a ride. And one of them, whose name, I think she's actually named. I think she says her name is Laura. But, you know,
but
so
it's her again.
But it's her again.
Right.
And he goes back to the thing and it turns out that she's a prostitute.
Yeah, he thinks she loves her, but it turns out he's got a
Yeah, because she's all like, I already
that's what I wanted to get to in this. You know, my interpretation of it based upon my experiences and fucking knowing guys and, you know, dudes like we know from the club who get, especially when they're young, they get wrapped up in these girls. All right. And they get wrapped up and they do all this kind of stupid shit behind these girls because they have in their mind a very artificial image of who that woman is.
Yeah.
They're not in love with that woman. They're in love with who they're imagining
the
that woman could be.
Yeah.
And not the way they are.
Yeah.
And that's what I interpreted.
And that's kind of what I said.
And
I
mean, he's a young guy and he's meeting different women. But he's imagining them to all be this idealized. Well, you're going to get disappointed every time.
Yeah, and that's essentially exactly what happens.
Yeah, you got to take a woman for who she is, not who you want her to be.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on. That's
yeah,
how I
there's definitely like a big thing of that too.
Right.
And I think that the fact that so the third one that he meets that ends up being, because she's all like, oh, I love you and this and that, and they have sex and it's great and everything like that. Actually, I think she was the one that was talking about the medication and stuff like
yeah.
that. Because I think
that's
I
what I thought, because I was like, that's not how I remembered the story.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
I remember the story. He shows up to finally fucking kind of like make out with her and get married to her. And she goes, oh, guess what? I love you, but I got to go with this dude who raped me.
Yeah.
Because he
that
got me over.
That was the second. That was the
yeah,
second.
Yeah, he got
girl.
Me over my cockophobia.
Yeah.
All right. So, and he's like sitting there going, whoa, good thing I didn't cut my junk off.
Yeah.
Because he would have cut his junk off for nothing.
Yeah.
Self-emasculation. Yeah. You know, that's I understood that theme too. That's how I understood it.
Yeah.
This is just this is a series of like I said before, it's a series of stories about women from a young man's point of view. He's bending over backwards to fucking satisfy a woman that doesn't even exist. It's a woman he thinks exists.
Yeah.
Turns out no. You know, one of them is screwing her boss. The other one's a fucking hooker. The other one's this and that. They're all different.
Yeah.
Okay. But none of them are who you. None of those women are who you think she is.
Or yeah, none of them live up to their idealization.
No,
of her.
He's in love with this image, this internal image he's invented.
Yeah,
and that's you see these young dudes fucking doing stupid shit behind women that just do stupid shit.
Well, yeah,
they'll sell their souls to some woman.
Well,
and
I think
she's a lesbian, dude. You
well,
can't
and a lot of
make that you can't make her.
I laugh because I know what
you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I know who you're
that girl's a lesbian, man. She don't fucking love you. Yeah. You just love her.
Yeah. Well, I think that happens a lot with guys. It's kind of like they kind of put a woman on a pedestal, like you said. They've constructed like a whole idea of this woman in their head, like a whole relationship
before
in their head.
Before they even met the girl.
Before they even know them or before they know them all that well.
Yeah, they have a fantasy woman in their mind that they've built up and then they meet some woman and put that fucking fantasy on her.
Yeah.
And that's
fucked up to do.
That's what
they
do.
Please do not do that.
That's a young guy fucking mistake.
Yeah. Please don't do that.
You're supposed to fucking get over that by the age of 17.
I mean, you would think.
But some guys, if they don't, some guys don't learn. And some guys,
it's bad too, because sometimes, as you see in this movie, even though it's done like kind of more humorously or dark humor in this one, is that when you have built up this woman to such an extent and you are disappointed, it makes you go off the deep end. Because as soon as Francesco finds out that the third woman is a prostitute, like, the roommate starts asking for money and everything like that. And he says, but she said she loved me. And he's like, oh, that'll be more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, now you owe her
a thousand more, Lyra.
You're paying for the girlfriend experience.
Right, you're paying for that.
Yeah.
So he essentially, he burns down their apartment.
Yeah, with them in it.
With them in it.
Yeah.
So he kills three random women.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that happens in this, and this is interesting too. So after that happens, he ends up, he doesn't go turn himself in, but he's not trying to hide or nothing. So, like, the cop comes to his... comes to the cottage in the cemetery, and then he essentially says, hey, don't you want to talk about those three girls that died in the apartment in the fire and stuff like that? He's like, oh, we got the guy that did that. That guy also killed his wife and daughter, and it turns out that it was his friend Franco from the earlier from the office earlier, the guy he's talked to him on the phone a couple times too. So Franco is essentially taking credit. Now, Franco did kill his wife and kid, and that's that was also foreshadowed like in a phone conversation they had earlier on. You know, everything in this is foreshadowed, like everything that happened in the beginning, like it comes back later on. So it's very, very well put together if you're like paying attention, because everything is called back like later, every conversation they had, every image, everything. So so what Franco does essentially is like he did kill his wife and kid, but he also took credit for the three women in the apartment that Francesco killed. Now, here's where it gets kind of weird, because then Francesco goes to visit, like, Franco tries to kill himself, I think by drinking iodine, and so he's, like, in a coma, and Francesco goes to visit him in the hospital. Franco doesn't remember him, which was very Tenant-like. I thought that scene was very Tenant-like. But then while that whole thing was going on, because Franco's like, I don't know you, and all this other, even though they were, like, best friends before, and then, like, doctors and nurses start coming in, and Francesco starts shooting him, like, in the middle of the fucking hospital. And then when he leaves, the cop comes up and he's like, there's a madman up there on the fourth floor, like, shooting people. And, you know, he's like, oh, you have a gun. Good. It's like, you know, he's like, I did it. But no one's listening. So I feel like I have seen a theory that Francesco and Franco are actually the same person. Like, Francesco is like Franco's id, like running around loose or some shit like that, which I guess you could kind of read it that way, too. But see, so as the thing goes on, like when they get to the very end, what ends up happening is that Francesco and Nagi decide that they're going to leave Buffalora and they're going to go out and see the bigger world. Yeah. Now, again, this is a callback because he was telling somebody on the phone, I think he was talking to Franco on the phone earlier in the movie, where he said something about, like, I don't even know what the rest of the world looks like. I don't even know if it exists anymore and all this other kind of stuff. Because like I said, there's a very life and death, like purgatorial kind of thing going on. So him and Nagi get in the car and they drive, you know, through the streets of Buffalora, and then they go through this tunnel, and when they come out of the tunnel, there's a steep drop-off, and then there's nothing. There's just mountains. There's, like, a cliff, and those, like, there's nothing more.
Road goes over a cliff.
And he just basically says, oh, it's just as I suspected, the rest of the world doesn't exist.
Yeah, so they're not in a normal dimension.
Yeah.
I think they're in an imaginary, theoretical dimension.
Or it's in someone else's head.
Yeah.
Because they do, because then they're like both sitting there and then it starts to snow, which is a reference back to, it's not only a reference to fucking Rosebud, Citizen Kane, but it's also a reference to the very first shot of the film, which was a snow globe with two guys standing on a thing.
And then it shows the snow globe with the two guys, with them standing on the edge of it. So they're in a snow globe.
Yeah, so it's almost kind of like there isn't a world outside of Buffalora.
I still, you know, the way I took it is that the whole thing was just like a learning experience. It was like a hypothetical situation that you're supposed to learn from, that it was inside a snow globe for you to see.
Yeah.
That's the way so I don't think it really happened.
Yeah, I think it was
it's just an example.
Yeah, I think it definitely had that too.
And I think it was.
Another thing too was that there was a role reversal because, you know, like I said, Nagi, who was kind of like mentally challenged, quote unquote, through the whole thing and could only say one word, which was nya, that's all he could say. But he said it like in different inflections, like depending on what he meant. And so at the very end of the movie, when, you know, they're both just sitting there by the cliff and then they're thinking about going back to Buffalora. And Nagi turns around and says in a perfectly normal voice, he's like, I'd like to go back home right now.
Yeah.
And then Francesco says nya at him. So there was like a role reversal at the end. And there was also kind of a thing too where he realized that Nagi was actually his best friend and all this other kind of stuff. But
they might have been the same being different at different aspects of the same person.
I think I think there was something to do with Franco as well, like his other living friend who took credit for his murders and like like Francesco couldn't get arrested
maybe
for the murders
and
stuff.
Maybe it was the ego, superego and the id.
It was something like that. This was definitely some kind of like hypothetical, symbolic sort of situation. But like I said, I know it sounds like when you say it like that, it sounds like kind of pretentious or wanky or something like that, but it's not like that at all. It's still like a fun zombie movie. There's still like zombie gore. I mean, there's still like great scenes, like the dude with the fucking in the motorcycle accident, like Claudio, and he gets like buried with his motorcycle, just like in Psychomania, and he busts out like fucking meatloaf. Yeah. And then this other girl is like there. She has come to she had heard that that people were resurrecting like at the cemetery. So she sneaks back in there because she wants to see him again to find out if he loves her more than Valentina and all this other stuff. And she comes back there and she gets on the motorcycle with this dead dude. His like fucking helmet's all fucked up and his eyes got with the glass sticking out and shit. And it's like, so Francesco finds them and he's eating her. Yeah. And then he goes to shoot the zombie, and she's like, don't shoot, he's only eating me. Yeah. He's, mind your business, I'll be eaten by whoever I please, she says. Yeah. So it's like the humor in this is very, like, deadpan. And I don't know, there's just something really, really funny. This reminds me a little bit of that movie, The Loved Ones, that black and white movie. Yeah. It has kind of like a similar... Yeah. sense of humor to
gotta
it.
Gotta get that one a while.
It's very, we should do like a thing of that.
It's expensive on Blu-ray and DVD. It's hard to find, but Love Him was great. Jonathan Winters.
Yeah. But this has like a similar, like very, like a morbid, deadpan humor to it. You know, and like I said, it looks gorgeous. It's very, very, very gothic. And not like in a Tim Burton-y kind of way. It's kind of more like a classical gothic. And it's weird because the cemeteries that they used, these were real cemeteries. They used a different one for Night and Day, I guess, just because of the way the lights worked out or whatever. But it looks incredible. Like, it looks really fucking... Because apparently they didn't even have to do much set decoration.
It looks like a gothic Italian horror movie. Just
yeah. But it's just... Yeah. And if you're... it's like I said, it's hard to get. You can watch it free on YouTube, at least until, like, the copyright
bots... take it down. Better hurry on.
Somebody take it down. So if you want to see it, go see it.
It's expensive and hard to find on
Yeah. Like I said, I don't even think it's on Blu-ray. It's on DVD, but that came out in 2006. And there's not really that much extra shit on it that I remember. I think there was just, like, one featurette that was, like, half an hour in a trailer. And that was it. There was, like, no director commentary or anything. So this is a movie that really, if you're into Italian horror, if you're just into, like, really weird, like, gothic, black comedy type of horror movies, I think you would really dig this, and I think it needs to get seen more, and it's kind of a shame that it doesn't, because, I mean, I can see how, like, why, because it's kind of strange, and I think a lot of people will watch it and be like, the end, be like, what the fuck? But there is kind of, like, if you watch it more than once, you do pick up very symbolic thing.
It's an Italian horror movie. It's got a 70s kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
But it's a modern production. You'll like it. Just, you know, you can see it for free on.
And also, YouTube. I want to mention, too, that, you know, if you're into, like, kind of looking into a lot of the symbolism and, like, shit like that, because, you know, it references... it references a lot of paintings and stuff like that, too.
Yeah.
But there was this one guy who... His name is Douglas Kesey from California Polytechnic. I guess he was a film student or something. And he actually wrote, like, a 20-page paper on this. Like, on particular... like the psychosexual kind of like the relationship between him and her and all this other kind of stuff called Intertwinings of Death and Desire in Michele Soavi's Della Morte, Della More. And you can read it for free online. It's actually really interesting. I read it, so I would recommend that. If you just, you know, what I just said, just Google that and you'll find it. There's one that you have to pay to download, but somebody has put it up for free too. It's like a PDF. But it kind of goes into a lot about this movie. And there's like a lot to kind of, you know, pick apart about this movie, and you can kind of have a bunch of different theories about it. But yeah, definitely go watch it on YouTube if it's still there. Check it out. It's really, really good. It's really weird. If you love odd cinema and Italian cinema, you will love it.